Good evening. My name is Robert, and I'll be your host tonight. Good evening. My name is Robert with Light Pockets. Tonight, I'll be your host again for our second show that Light Pockets is sponsoring. Tonight, we are talking about volunteering after disasters. Tonight, we'll go into brief descriptions of what people should be looking for as far as volunteering, what they should be aware of. And again, we have with us Dr. Jeanette Gallagher, who will be conducting the show and discussing on volunteering. So, good evening, Dr. Gallagher. Are you with us?
Yes, I am. Hello, Robert. How are you?
Good, and you?
Fine, thank you.
Good.
Here we are on Katrina's anniversary, the 6 years.
This is true. That is true. For those of you who are listening or tuning in to us tonight, tonight is the anniversary. Tonight marks, it's correct, 6 years, correct?
Yes, it is.
That is correct. 6 years since Katrina. And it's interesting how things have turned around, and it's interesting how things have not turned around. And now we have New York in the Upper East Coast dealing with floodwaters after Hurricane Irene. So let's start talking this evening as far as people wanting to volunteer. What should they be aware of?
Yes, for Hurricane Irene, there's a lot of flooding up in Vermont where they did not expect it, and they said that a great percentage of all of the roads were washed out, so a lot of people are left high and dry, and there'll be a lot of volunteers going to Vermont, New Jersey, and upstate New York. And it is very important because when floodwaters come in, they bring everything else with them. People don't realize when it rains, it comes from the sky. But then when you start flooding, that's water coming from the bottom up. If your car is parked in your driveway and it's flooded up to the middle of the doors, well, your gas tank, your oil, your engine, all of those pollutions are all in the water underneath the car. And the same thing with the sewer system. As soon as the water starts coming up, the sewer system is not sealed from your bathroom all the way down to the plant and then all the way back again. Things do have holes, they do have leaks, and they do have cracks, and that water is very polluted. So a lot of information right now needs to be about walking in flooded waters. It was all over the television today. People had their kids riding bicycles through the water, and a lot of people were going into the water with just shorts on and flip-flops, and that is really dangerous.
Let's talk about that for a minute. Just how dangerous is it? Because I don't think people realize that if you have a cut or a sore or an abrasion and walking through waters that have all of that contaminants in it, how dangerous is that exactly?
Well, there's several different types of infections you can get when you do have exposure to all of these bacteria and amoebas and metals that are in this type of water. Definitely staph is at a really high incidence after a storm because all of the water, if you get a cut or a crack in your skin or if you have some kind of sores or even just mosquito bites, you start scratching, the staph on your skin, when you're sweating and everything, can get into those areas. And when you're out in the water, you're picking up more and more bacteria. So you end up with these big boils on your skin, which antibiotics really does not do anything for. A lot of people have had those boils after Katrina lanced. Staph was very prevalent because a lot of waste was in the water. There were hospitals. If a hospital is flooded, well, hospital has all kinds of red bag toxic material in it. If anyone knows what a red bag is, that's what you're supposed to call medical waste. Well, it's not like at all the doctor's offices, dental offices, or medical facilities that all of that waste was picked up and put somewhere prior to the storm. It may be still on site. And when it starts to become flooded, there's a lot of that stuff going into the water.
Mm-hmm. And I can personally attest to the staph infection because working after Katrina in an uptown area, I contacted staph and had staph infection.
and the boils. And I can tell you it is not anything pleasant that you would want to go through. What are some of the precautions that people that are looking to volunteer and go into those areas, what sort of precautions should they take?
Well, just recently there was an amoeba infection with two or three people across the U.S. on the East Coast and down here in Louisiana area. The amoeba was in warm water, so if some of the lakes or streams had warm water and amoeba had propagated in there, that could just as easily gotten into your skin, into your nose or your eyes or any opening in your body, and then you can turn around, and a lot of people have actually died from that this year. Also, the fungus that was after Joplin, that was when you had cuts or abrasions. They just didn't heal because they were open for a little bit. There's a lot of air blowing around, mold spores. There's a lot of buildings that are disturbed after a storm. So just going in and looking at a cut and stitching it up and not really knowing what possibly they could have been exposed to is not really very safe.
Is there anything that volunteers can bring with them, or should they bring anything with them as far as over-the-counter medications, if any, or should they get shots or anything before volunteering?
They definitely need a tetanus update. No matter who goes in to volunteer, it doesn't matter if you're just going to go down with your kids for the week or if you're going with a church group or a social group, you really should have your tetanus updated, because if you go to the area and then you have a scratch or a cut or an injury, now you are asking the overstressed medical personnel that are already there to give you services and provide services for you when they really need to be focused on the people that were hurt in the event. So number one is you really need to have your tetanus shot. Number two is definitely do not go to those areas if at any time you yourself are immune compromised. What that means is if you possibly have just recovered from a very serious illness, or if you take a lot of medications, or if your breathing is impaired, or if you have trouble with your heart, while it's great to help, it's also causing a problem because you have additional stressors on yourself and you may end up needing services there. So if you have any cuts or anything, or if you're a diabetic and you really can't tell if you have cuts on your feet or anything, probably not the best place to be because you'll have a higher incidence of possibly contracting these. And definitely teenagers and children, if they have any type of asthma or if they just don't pay attention to what they're doing and possibly they may be a little more accident prone, this might not also be a place for them to go.
Which brings up a question with what you just touched on. If a person is on particular medications or prone to asthma or medications that aren't readily available in other areas, how stressful would that be for a person if they went to an area who was already suffering from a disaster and not be able to get those medications?
If you don't have your own stock for at least 30 days with you on your person, you really need to not be going because there is nothing available. It's not like you could say, oh, my prescription's up, I can go to the local pharmacy from the grocery store or whatever and pick it up, because there are not any of those areas there. The grocery stores get affected just as well as a house does. And the grocery store may take a little bit longer time because they really have to decide what they're going to put there, if it's safe or not. Pharmacies, if you were a person that stayed for the storm and let's say you now need medical services, you're going to have just a triage people there. What that means is you're just going to be able to sit down and say, I really have this bone broken, or I have a really high fever, or I feel like I'm having a heart attack, and they can do something about it. Other than that, you really need to not be there because there are not enough medical people to help you. There are no facilities to help you. You'll have to be bussed out, And it will just actually turn into a bigger calamity than you ever could think of.
As far as medications and those type of readily available things that probably won't be readily available, how important is it for volunteers to make sure that they have enough clean clothes, because there won't be facilities to wash and dry clothes?
Mm-hmm. Well, if you're going into flood water, now you've contaminated yourself and your clothing, so you really should not be wearing it the next day. After Katrina, we saw a lot of teenagers, like high school and colleges, that came down in the summer to help out, and they were put into a very large empty facility that had flooded, and they put cots down for them, and there were restaurants or the Red Cross came in and fed them. They had very menial facilities. But, however, that is really exposing them to things, too, because, you know, you don't think, well, I'm going to take three pairs of clothes, but in that same day, all three pairs of clothes might have gotten dirty with possibly water that was contaminated, or you might have been pulling off roofs that had asbestos slates in them, or you may be pulling down siding and sheetrock on the inside of the houses, and there's a lot of lead in that paint. And you turn around, you say, oh, I'm just dirty, it's no big deal, and you go and you lay down on your cot, you've exposed that to all kinds of toxins. And it just seems to be such a vicious circle. The biggest thing to do is take short times to volunteer, have enough of your own supplies and enough of your own clothing, and be able to look a little down the road and see what are the facilities going to be like, what will be provided and what won't be provided.
That's very good. Very good advice. What should people who are looking to volunteer, what type of identifications, what type of, you know, identifying marks or anything like that should they take with them, or as far as driver's license and things like that, just in case, you know, something transpires?
A lot of people tend to come with a lot of things that they can plug in. I'll use my computer, my cell phone, I'll put in some earbuds, I'll have my wallet on my back, or I'll be carrying these backpacks. All of that stuff collects dirt, dust, and contaminants, and you really don't, less is better. You really not want to be bringing those things with you. It's called clothes, what you need, see if they have food available. You need a driver's license. And it highly recommends you make at least two copies of that driver's license. You put one in with your clothing, one in your pocket, the clothing that you leave at your cot, and then one in your pocket, and then your driver's license in another pocket, because almost all the time things get lost. Don't bring any Social Security cards with you. Do have an identifying marker or a card in your wallet that would say, this is my name, this is my address, who to contact in an emergency. Possibly have a picture of yourself with your parents or someone else who is responsible for you attached to that card, because it's very difficult to get services or medical help if there is not someone to be able to call. They tend to take your address and look it up and call that number, but really, if you are a mother and a father and you have stepchildren or you adopted someone, it's going to be very difficult to go just based on a driver's license.
One of the other things that we could talk about that was truly prevalent that took place after Katrina with the influx of workers and people volunteering is what should these people, church-based groups, other groups, those are fine because you're volunteering with a group, correct? What should, let's just say, you know, I want to go, you know, to New York. I don't know anybody. I'm not with a faith-based organization. What should I look for so that I don't become a target?
Right. Biggest deal for teens and college students is you absolutely must go with a group. And a group does not mean 4 to 5. A group means 15, 20 people. If you don't have backup, you're in an area where let's say, for example, here in New Orleans, after the storm, most of the people left. The people that did not leave were starting to cause trouble. And if you had gone to shelters in some areas at different times, there are a lot of predators there. That's very unsafe for anyone that thinks, oh, well, it's just going to be fine. I know the area. It'll be okay. But it's sort of like a hornet's nest, a storm. It stirs it all up. It mixes everybody around. And if you go into an area that you thought was always safe, I've been there a million times, it's no big deal, but now you have other people with other situations coming into that area as drifters. You could have a lot of crimes. There's a lot of social issues that could happen to you. You could also have a lot of people who are detoxing. If there's a group of maybe, let's say, 500 or 600 of people that were relying on illegal drugs and alcohol to be able to make it day to day, they are now homeless because they are not going to go to a shelter. They probably are hanging out in all of the abandoned homes and situations. And these people, when they are detoxing, are very dangerous. And it's just not a pretty place to be.
As also in the area as far as security, what should volunteers bring in order to purchase things? Credit cards, should they bring cash? You know, what are some of the things that they should do in that case?
Most of the time when you're going into an area that was devastated, moderate or severe, there will not be facilities generally in the first several weeks to run credit cards. Cash is the only way you might be able to get food. You may be able to get a few essentials from a store if it opens. You may be able to get a few things from a drugstore if they're starting to restock. Do not rely on ATM, debit cards, credit cards, because you will find more often than not you will not be able to use them.
When volunteers go into these areas and they're carrying cash, it's very, very important not to disclose to people around you, not even people that you come with, the amount of money that you're carrying on your person. That way you also don't become a target in that way with the people that you came with.
Right. If there's somehow, if you're going with a group, let's say maybe 15 college students, maybe appoint an older adult to be the leader, to be able to take care of all of this important information for you, to possibly hold everybody's things in a locked box, and that person possibly be maybe a little bit outside of the area. If things would happen, that person be the responsible person. You'd also have to have power of attorney to be able to have documents that if something happened to you, this person would be able to take you and get you help and contact your family. That really happens a lot is people get hurt and you're waiting and waiting because no one has power of attorney. You should always have that legal document. If you're a bunch of people all together, just have some sort of form that is legal so that the hospital will be able to see it and they will say, okay, who's this person? Stand here. We're going to do this. We need to get the family on the phone. And that would happen very rapidly.
Okay. What are some of the just normal things that volunteers should look for?
The biggest difference is they really need to bring their own supplies. They should never go anywhere without face masks. They should never go anywhere without goggles on their face. They definitely should bring their own gloves. That would be plastic and utility gloves. They definitely should be having boots or high shoes. Never bring any flip-flops or open-toe shoes. They should not have midriff shirts or tank tops. It should be T-shirts, jeans, socks, boots, hat to keep the sun off your face so you don't have to put on creams and all that other stuff. Because when you put on creams and suntan lotions, what happens is let's say you get a lot of dust on your skin, or if you start sweating, that's how staph and other toxins tend to get into your skin more readily. So you really don't want to be using those. So if you can put a bandana around your head and put a hat on, those are much better ideas.
What about long sleeve shirts?
Long sleeve shirts only if it's cool enough, because if you start overheating, there will absolutely be no way you can cool your body down. Once you get to a certain point, it's a point of no return, and then you're not helping anybody. You may as well go home. So long sleeve shirts probably only if it is under 80 degrees. Depends on where the storm is. In the north right now, it was 67 degrees in Philadelphia today, so it's perfect to clean up. But here in New Orleans today, it was 98, so there's no way you'd be wearing the long sleeve shirts. But you definitely need long pants.
When people go to volunteer, which is better for them to decide to go through? Faith-based organizations, people that are set up to handle these type of situations, or let's just say I'm looking to volunteer and, you know, somebody put an ad on Craigslist for volunteers and you have no clue who they are, the company, or anything. Is that a good idea to volunteer through those groups?
No, and you definitely don't want to go by yourself either. So like I was saying in the beginning, with just a mother, maybe two kids, it's not really a good idea. Your first choice would be the Red Cross. They're there from the beginning, and they're there at the end. They never leave until there are systems set up to be able to take care of the people there. So that would be number one. Number two would be faith-based people, which would be your churches of all denominations, and they accept everybody of all denominations, so it doesn't matter what you are. There's also other groups, www.evacuteer.org. They are now starting to be able to help people set up, be able to do disaster relief. But after that, you really need to be in a group, have it designated. You need to be wearing identification markers. Probably even put a lanyard around your neck and have some sort of badge to know who everybody is.
That's all good information, and all information that really that people who want to volunteer pay attention to. What about in going in volunteering in areas, should a person wait before volunteering, or should a person... There's a disaster that took place. Let me hurry up and go there because lodging and places to sleep and stuff like that might not readily be available. So is there a time period for people to wait?
As soon as a disaster occurs, there's a definite timeline of who can get into the areas, why, and when. So first, the local government and the National Guard are the first people to be in there to be able to assess the area. Second, medical personnel will be let in. Third will be the Red Cross. And then fourth will start being some of your other government and rescue people like firemen or nurses, whoever will be coming in from the other areas, they'll let them in. After that, really, there are already some groups set up that have been doing this for years since Katrina. They go in first because they have the assets, they have everything that they need, they know where they're going, and they run in like an army. And then after that, those people tend to start leaving. They will be there about for the first month or so if it's a moderate storm. If it's a severe storm, they may be there for the first 6 months. Maybe 9 months, but after that, people start leaving. That's the time when you start setting up other groups of your own. But never do it on Craigslist because you really don't know the area. Possibly be better to set up some sites and see if you can get people together to have local meetings, and you have local people go together and have everything already all set up.
Most of the time, the faith-based organizations and stuff and all, they're already, like you said, set up. And they all fall under the auspices of FEMA. Should a volunteer contact FEMA directly, or should they still, you know, follow the normal chain of going to the faith-based organizations first?
It just means when they're under FEMA, it just means that they have registered, that they've done it before, and they're able to do it again. You go to the faith-based organizations that are listed under FEMA, on their website. You go to FEMA.gov, and it lists all the faith-based organizations that are available that do disaster relief.
Great information. Great information. Is there anything else, having gone through Katrina yourself and experienced, you know, exactly what you've been talking about, is there anything else that you could talk to people about as far as volunteering or anything else? Any other thing that you could share with them?
Yes. If you really don't know what you're doing, don't go. You're only a hazard or a catastrophe waiting to happen. Number two, if you've had a lot of heartache in your life and you've really not dealt with that, this is not the place to be there, because there's a lot of things that you really don't want to see, and there's a lot of things that are going to go on that you did not expect. You really need to not be there. If you're really strong and sturdy, you're good and healthy, you've never had any problems, you've seen a lot of things throughout your life, you've been able to handle situations of grief and loss, then that's fine. Otherwise, you really need to stay away.
And that's pretty good advice, because from a personal standpoint, both you, myself, and other people, when we were finally let back in here in New Orleans, it looked like a devastated third world country. People were not prepared for what they had to go through in an everyday instance. They simply were not prepared for it. Would you agree on that?
Yes, we were not even prepared for it. And definitely we drove around a lot and would take a lot of pictures and video, but just at the end of the day it would wear you out and you would just fall on the floor and go to sleep and get up the next day and say you didn't realize that it would be that bad. And, you know, the old saying, go to sleep, it's better the next day, that's not really true. It wasn't better the next day. It wasn't better the next month or the next year. You could still drive into New Orleans East today or down in St. Bernard, and you could still see all of the devastation there. For that matter, you could still go down into Mid-City and see all the houses that are still empty and boarded up. You're still seeing the devastation. It's just you have to put it in a different mind frame of this is what it is, this is the new normal, and we'll have to take it from here.
That's good advice, very good advice. We are coming up on the last few minutes of our show. I don't think that we have any callers in the queue for tonight's show. So what we'd like to do is let everybody know that we will be scheduling another Blog Talk Radio show probably within a week or two. We're going to try to get some more research done, and we're going to see how things shape up and take place up east, and keep our eyes on what's on the horizon. From our understanding, we have some other issues out there that could arise and become hurricanes. So we just need to make sure that everyone stays aware of what's taking place.
Yes, because, you know, today they just got done saying on the television that there is another tropical wave out there, and if it is named, it will be called Katia, K-A-T-I-A, and that is the replacement name that they made for Katrina when they retired Katrina's name. So we're at a never-ending tropical wave season.
Well, with that having been said, we greatly appreciate those of you who've tuned in. If anyone would like to get in touch with Dr. Gallagher, you can email her or you can contact her through her website. One of those websites, of course, is www.lifepockets.com, or you can tune into her blog at lifepockets.wordpress.com. We greatly appreciate all of you that have tuned in. We look forward to hearing from you again. With that, good night, everyone.